Welcome to the Modern Math Teacher Podcast, the podcast that will help you use today's best teaching strategies to ignite and excite your students in math class, and maybe even make it the best part of their day. Hey, I'm Kristen Moore, a longtime believer that math is so much more than just solving for X. I went from teaching straight from a textbook to implementing project-based learning and boosting student engagement in my class each and every day along the way. I'm here to give you the PD you need to successfully do the same with your students. Are you up for it? Let's do this. Well, hey there, Modern Math Teacher. Welcome back to another episode of the Modern Math Teacher Podcast. Today, we're going to explore innovative ways to make procedural practice engaging and exciting. I am so over the dreaded drill and kill worksheet. So let's spice things up a bit, shall we? We're going to explore four ways you can make practice for procedural fluency more engaging and meaningful for your students. Because we need our students to be proficient in their problem solving, but we don't want them to dread it any longer. It's time to move beyond the traditional rote learning and practice and advance towards more effective math instruction. On today's episode, we'll equip you with all the practical and exciting methods to enhance procedural practice in your math classrooms. So what do you say? Are you ready to skip the copy line and say goodbye to traditional worksheets? Then let's dive in. First up, let's tackle a newer and super popular approach. It's the thin slice. Introduced to many of us by Peter Lilliedahl's Building Thinking Classrooms book, this approach to curricular tasks is designed to help students maintain the flow. That's that sweet spot between frustration and boredom, where we're increasing the challenge of the problems while building students' ability to solve these problems. A thin task sequence is designed as a series of extensions. It's the ability to increase the challenge just a little bit as the group's ability to solve these problems also increases. What is fantastic about this approach is that it's rooted in variation theory from Martin and Sue, where before something changes, it must first stay the same. So prior to making a change in a set of problems, we want to really solidify a student's ability to work with a particular setup of the problem. In the book, Building Thinking Classrooms, Peter references a series of questions designed to lead students to discover how to factor polynomial equations by seeing their connection to multiplying binomials. Every few problems, you make a minor change. So, for example, changing the sign of one of the coefficients in the trinomial. Students then figure that out and work on it a few times before you make an additional change. This approach enables students to apply prior knowledge and past success skills to new problem sets, leading them through productive struggle inside that Goldilocks zone of flow, where it's not too easy and repetitive, where the students are going to get bored, and it's not too tough, where they're going to give up. If you're looking for a thin slice similar to the one Peter described here, make sure you check out Mathematic What's Missing, which does a really great job of leading students through the discovery of the relationships between multiplication and factoring of polynomial equations. I'll make sure to link to it in the show notes. Now, creating thin tasks can be as simple as taking a look at your curriculum and selecting and sequencing the problem strategically to build on one another with just one variation at a time. There are an infinite number of ways to set up thin slicing in your classroom, from, you know, cutting out single strips of paper with a number on each strip and having the students or groups get a new problem each time they successfully solve the problem before. They can get it from you, they can get it from a basket, they can get it from wherever, right? Or you can give a series of a few at a time where students work through in succession and then get a new problem set to work on. I like to use this task card method with my geometry students. You know, geometry can be a little bit trickier when it comes to thin slicing. Thin slicing is really a natural fit when we make those coordinate connections or combine the algebra skills with the geometry concepts, but you can definitely use it for all sorts of geometry topics. So, geo teachers, don't you fret. Task cards have become my go-to. So each time they provide students with four questions at a time, and I level them as mild, medium, and spicy. I like to change up the way that I have them printed on the card. So I've usually got three different color card sets to help differentiate between the mild, medium, and spicy. And I have those ready to go at the student's board. So each of them starts with, you know, their mild level at their border, at their pocket. And I still provide the context for the task verbally as Peter suggests in the book. For example, when we did this with segment addition, I prompted the students to explore the relationship between various measurements in the geometric figures to see if they could come up with a rule or a theorem about what is always true. Then students started with some mild problems, which had them drawing out their segments, label them appropriately, and come up with their measurement. Once students were able to solve all four of those problems from that mild set sufficiently, students were given the medium task card sets to add to their pocket and continue to work through. It was a super fun way to modify and use task cards, and I love using it with Geo because it means I can include visuals into the thin slicing, and as I've mentioned before, Geo is a very visual subject to master. So if you're a geometry teacher, make sure you go back and check out episode 13, Building My Geometry Thinking Classroom, to get way more insight on how I use these thinking practices to teach such a visual math subject. All right, next up, let's talk about getting into our procedural practice through partner or group collaborative work. When students work together, they are able to rely on one another's strengths to help fill in their own gaps. It's one of my favorite ways for students to engage in material, especially when the topic is building on a foundation students should have had from a few years ago. Students always come to us with gaps in their knowledge, but I'm sure we can all agree some of that has been exacerbated in this post-pandemic season. By providing time for students to work through problems together, they're able to help fill one another in on how to approach something, providing reminders and reteaching their peers. And let's be honest, you guys, having your classmate reteach you something as a reminder is a way more effective method than me having to reteach concepts from previous grade levels. Not only are they going to get it better because it comes from up here, they're not going to feel any sense of shame about it when it's just like, oh, hey, don't you remember when we, you know, have this with fractions, we have to do this. And they say, oh, yeah, you're right. I do remember that. Instead of me having to give a lesson that remediates the whole class, their peer can help them relearn it quicker. All right. So collaborative group work also promotes a deeper understanding of mathematical concepts. So as students are working and talking, they're able to discuss strategies and uncover patterns. These aha moments that they are having are helping them to build up their conceptual understanding while working toward procedural proficiency. It is a total win-win. Now, whereas a lot of our thin slicing practice can be pulled from your curriculum, some of my favorite partner and group work has come from Teachers Pay Teachers. One practice I particularly love is the quadratic equations partner activity from All Things Algebra. What I loved about this one most is that the two partners are practicing similar skills, solving with factoring and solving with quad formula. And their answer should be the same. This helps build understanding of the interconnectedness of the solving methods and provide students with practice in two skills instead of just one. For my geometry students, I like partnering them up and sending them around to complete, you know, task cards, scavenger hunts, or station activities together. This gives them someone to bounce their ideas off of. And as they work their way around the room or the hallway, wherever you've got them set up, they end up working with other groups and other partners of students as well. This mixture of voices and ideas helps build communication about mathematical concepts and increases their vocabulary usage, all while building in those procedural practice skills. And my geometry teachers, you know, there is so much vocab to cover. So these activities that utilize the vocab and get them to think and talk about it while they problem solve is a fantastic way for them to use it naturally and to acquire that skill. I literally just had my students working through a similarity scavenger hunt last week that got them up and talking about scale factor, image, pre-image, ratios, and proportions, and so much more. Now, while we're on the topic of partner activities, let's take it one step further and talk about how we can use games and gamification to get students to practice their skills in a more engaging way than working through problems 1 through 37 odd from their textbook. People are naturally drawn to seeking out enjoyable experiences. A textbook is not an enjoyable experience, but you want to know what is? A game. People are natural problem solvers. enjoyment seekers, and we are all primally a little bit competitive. It is the perfect combination for bringing games and gamification into your classroom as a way to work on that procedural practice. Now, there's a few ways we can do this. You can be playing like actual games, like board games and card games. You could be playing games that are designed by other teachers or by yourself that are similar to games and game shows that your students are familiar with. Or you can gamify the way your lesson is structured. Let's take a look at all of these because they're each great ways to build in that procedural practice. Now, there are some amazing games you can play with your students that you can snag from Amazon or your local Target or Walmart, or you can ask for a donation from your class. Some of my favorites for these are Mathable, Baseball Tivots, Prime Club, Yahtzee, Sequence, and Set. Each of these practices different skills that build up students' numeracy and problem solving and can be used in the middle and high school classrooms and can be used either strategically within a unit to connect ideas, like, I mean, just think of all the possibilities with probability and Yahtzee, right? Or as a day of fun and relaxation while still working on your math skills. This can be particularly great going into a break or coming back from a break. Now, if you want to modify other games that your students know and love, either with paper-based or digital games, definitely check out some of the things people are posting on TPT. You can find some really cool math versions of games that your students already know and love. My students have loved math war games using properties of exponents, and everyone loves a good bingo game, right? Then there's some really cool interactive games you can play using PowerPoint and smart boards that, you know, so many of us seem to have these days. Things like Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune and so much more. All Things Algebra has quite a few of these PowerPoint smart board games ready to go. So if you're looking for some either to use in your classroom or for inspiration on how you could make your own, make sure to go check her out on TPT. Another popular way to play games as a group is with the game Castle Attack. It is a well-loved review game where students drop a castle, they get 3 lives, and have to correctly solve problems to be able to either remove lives from another team or teams or add a life to their team. The competition ends when only one team is still alive, or, you know, whoever has the most lives by the end of the game if you want to keep them practicing all hour long. This is a super great game. You can do a quick Google search and find out a lot more about it, but you can use it to review any activity you want. Then there's one more method of gamification that I love, and this is the Math Wars method from Juliana Tapper. It's a gamified version of the gradual release model, and it's one I found to be so successful in my intervention class last year. I like to think of it as like gamified thin slice, where you model the problem solving and you're speaking out loud what you're thinking. Then you do a similar problem with your students, but you're calling on them to help provide the steps and justifications as you solve the problem. Then you give a series of problems where the students solve them on their own. This is where it gets real fun. They then are going to compare their answers with table mates, and they give those answers to earn points, right? So if it's correct, they get points. If it's incorrect, another team can steal. I just love this. By breaking up the lesson into these like smaller chunks and modifying with that variation theory, similar to thin slicing, your students are able to get in the practice they need in a safe and structured format. This is particularly helpful with intervention courses, as I said, but also for just really tough problem-solving procedures as well. So if you're interested in more on Math Wars, I'm going to leave a link to Juliana's full program so you can register and learn from the best. It is 100% a PD course I recommend taking. All right, that brings us to our fourth and final method, problem-solving and performance tasks. So far, the methods we've discussed have been basically updated versions of worksheets and practice problem sets. But let's go beyond that and let's talk about how problem solving and performance tasks can provide ample opportunity for procedural practice as well. These often get overlooked at providing the all-important procedural practice because they're often thought of as just higher order tasks to aspire to get to and not the ones that actively engage students in repetitive practice. problem-solving tasks, challenge our students to apply their knowledge in real-world scenarios. And when they do this, they often have to rely on their procedural knowledge to create a model and verify that their solution is going to work. This verification process and the need to continue to revise and tweak their models is what leads to that same repetition that your students need. While I certainly would not use this method for early stages of learning a new skill, these are primed for pushing students to grow their skills and apply them beyond what the textbook could provide for them. Some of my favorite problem-solving activities and performance tasks come from MAP Math Shell. It's an amazing website with formative assessments, lessons, and class challenges and tasks for students to actively investigate and problem solve with. These resources are offered for free and are available for middle and high school. And one thing I love about them is that they are organized by difficulty level as well. So you're guaranteed to find something at just the right challenge level for your students, going back into that Goldilocks zone, right? I always, always love using their boomerang lesson on maximizing profits for systems of equations. Not only are students working with multiple representations and having to create their own equations, they're doing error analysis on others, getting them extra practice in correct problem solving and identifying mistakes, so they're building up both their conceptual understanding and their procedural skills at the same time. Guys, it's a great website. You've got to go check it out. I'm going to make sure I link that here in the show notes as well. Whew. Oh my gosh, y'all. This has been so fun to share about all the different ways we can get our students to engage in math practice with practice strategies that are actually engaging, from thin slice problem sets to collaborative work, gamification, and problem-solving tasks. You've got a full arsenal of ideas ready to go to help your students boost their procedural skills without having to print out yet another boring worksheet. And we know that variety is the spice of life, right? So make sure to not just rely too heavily on one of these practices. It'll start off real fun and engaging and end up really, really boring for your students. Always keep variety in your practice methods to keep your students engaged. All right. I want to encourage each of you to find a lesson you're working on in the next week and experiment with these strategies. Then share your experiences on social media using the hashtag engaging math practices, and make sure to tag me so I can follow along and see what you're up to. You can always connect with me on Instagram at more than just X. That's more with two O's. All right, you guys, that is it for today's tips and tricks on how to make your math practice more engaging. Stay tuned next week, where we're moving to unlock student engagement with math projects. In the meantime, keep rocking your math class, keep shaking things up, keep trying something new, and as always, keep it real. Thanks for tuning in to find out today's tips and tricks. Continue the conversation and join the movement to boost student engagement and make math more meaningful inside the Modern Math Teachers Movement on Facebook. Till next time, keep it real.